Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
I want LSU up in Wisconsin in the middle of December. They're going to be, oh, we're not even leaving the hotel. The game's at 11. I can't get drunk enough. Where's my chicken broth?
SI's Ross Dellinger.
It's tough for Lane and them, right? I've seen he's been tweeting a lot this morning about God, which has been interesting to see.
And SI's Pat Forty.
Give him all of his NIL cars. Give him his mullet, whatever. He's got to show something to me that he can actually play big-time football, as does the entirety of Texas, as does Oklahoma, as does Texas A&M, and several other bums out there.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod. I'm tired of Texas. I'm done with Texas.
The University of Texas or the entire state? Or how are you drawing this
up? Oh, no, they're great up in Fort Worth. They're great in Fort Worth. I can't say anything bad about Texas Christian University.
Nope.
Texas. Mighty Texas. We're back. Sark, big game. Stop the Horn Frogs. 199 total yards with Quinn Ewers as your quarterback. 1 of 13 on third down.
It's unbelievable.
Average game yards per play, 3.3. 28 yards rushing. A great job, but I'll give all the credit to Texas TCU's defense. We're kind of waiting for TCU to fall. They're 10-0, baby. They're squirting blood at people from their little eyes like the Horned Frogs do. The TCU students are flunking out because they're all out in the desert trying to lick toads. And it's a mess. We can't handle this. But this is a show about misery. Texas. What was that? Nothing. Did nothing. Shut out for the first half. I was with a fine gentleman who had bet the over in the first half of TCU, Texas.
Oh, boy.
He was happy.
Oh, boy.
Then
3-0 at halftime, right?
Yeah, then he doubled down and bet the over in the second half, so that didn't go well either.
Oh, no. Man.
So maybe that's inspiring me. Like, what is it? What is Sark have, like, magic dust over people? He got the Manning family to be like, oh, this is the offense I want to play in. Pat, make it make sense.
Man, the laundry. It's all the laundry. It's all smoke and mirrors. It's complete smoke and mirrors. Hiring Sark he got Texas to hire him. I don't know how. Got Arch Manning to commit. I don't know how.
Johnny Walker Blue. Johnny Walker Blue to Cooper.
That's right. That's right. That's
that
right.
Did it. You can't
got
buy
everybody her. To think that their three-loss team somehow should be a touchdown favorite against undefeated TCU.
I fell for it.
Everybody to believe, look, I'm sorry, win with Quinn? No. Mm. What has Quinn Ewers done? He had a great game against Oklahoma. Big whoop. A lot of people have great games against Oklahoma. Oklahoma sucks, okay? Let's be clear about that. Laundry.
I'm liking Oklahoma the saltiness sucks. Of this podcast already. I'm liking Boy, how salty we are.
Out of the gate.
Let's go.
Hey, I'm just, you know what? Because I'm tired of this stuff. I for TCU's sake, they should be appalled. Quinn Ewers had a great game against Oklahoma. He had a very good game against Iowa State. Since then, 19 of 49 against Oklahoma State with three picks. 18 of 31 for 197 yards against Kansas State. They won anyway, Bijan Robinson, etc. And then this debacle last night, 17 of 39, no touchdowns, one interception, 4.4 yards per attempt. So give him all of his NIL cars. Give him his mullet, whatever. He's got to show something to me that he can actually play big-time football, as does the entirety of Texas, as does Oklahoma, as does Texas A&M, and several other bums out there.
They need to tow his car again. They need to tow everyone's
motivation,
car.
That's right.
Sark's car. Tow that thing.
I was more surprised at Bijan Robinson's numbers. 12 carries, 29 yards. I guess chalk it up to great defense at TCU, you know. Keep doubting the Horned Frogs and waiting for them to lose. And every week they end up coming up aces, man. And this week, credit a little bit to their defense. Nobody's really been able to stop Bijan this season, and they did. It's an incredible game for their defensive unit.
Yeah, I mean, let's switch this to TCU. What a night, right? Oh, they took our old coach. We fire our coach. Now he's down there. He's going to game plan it. We hyped it up. Gary Patterson's going to – oh, you want to see defense?
Yeah.
They beat Texas, which is always fun. Oh, wait. The guy who bet the under just texted me. Yeah, he's not happy.
Still mad, I'm sure.
JB, sorry. Still happened. you know, the whole thing, everyone's waiting for TCU to fall, including me. I'm the idiot. Yeah. I'm going to go. I think I was licking toads. I was high. I have no excuse. And they just come out and yeah, it's an ugly game, but you know what? Got the win. Beat Texas 10-0. I mean, it's just unbelievable what's going on there. Humiliating awesome. Texas. I mean, this is embarrassing. It's not that they lost. It's that they were so bad for so long. I think fans were leaving. Like, it looked like the stadium was kind of like people had left, even though it was a close game.
Yeah, I mean, like, Texas was so futile that once TCU got up 2 touchdowns, that game was completely over. Really, 1 touchdown, it felt like it was over. And then at 2 touchdowns, it absolutely was over. I mean, Texas' only touchdown was a fumble return. So that was a gift from TCU. But... to your point, man, massive credit to TCU. They find ways to win. I mean, look at the margins of victory. Since they destroyed Oklahoma, their margins of victory is 7-3, 10-10, 10-7. They've been in tight games, and they know what to do in tight games. They know how to execute. They know what plays to call. They know how to perform. And... you know, for some people say, well, they haven't been there. They haven't been on this stage. They sure look like they've been on the stage because they make plays. It's fantastic. It's been very fun to watch. And now they've got to pony up for one more road game at Baylor, close, you know, nearby at least, just a nice drive down 35. Actually, there's no nice drives down 35. It's still a short drive down 35 for that next week. And I mean, I'm telling you, they might even be able to afford a loss and still make the playoff. We're down to about 8 teams that really have a chance at this.
Yeah. Texas had 2 drives longer than 30 yards in the game. One was 71 yards. It was the field goal. And then another they had was 38 yards that ended on downs late in the game. Just... yeah, incredible. For Gary Patterson to be obviously the defensive guru, you know, fired him and now at Texas kind of, you know, helping run their defense. Give it up for TCU defensive coordinator Joe Gillespie, who was a high school football coach for like 15, 20 years. And now with the Horned Frogs, and I believe he's a Texas native, former high school Texas coach and high school coach in Texas. And his unit did an incredible job.
Yeah, amazing. We've been waiting for them to fall, and they do not fall. Now they still got 3 more tough ones. It's because of the margin, right? It's because of the margin. You just don't sit there and go, "Oh, this is like no one's sitting there with Ohio State or Michigan going, oh, yeah, we got a couple tough games here. We got the Illinois coming in." No, it's like, but because of TCU, it's like, okay, we're not 100% secure. So they got at Baylor's tough. They got Iowa State, and then they're going to have to beat somebody. But you know what? They're already in. We'll get to the Pac-12, obviously. There's 5 teams that could make the Pac-12 championship game right now.
Yeah.
TCU's in, right? So it's like, whatever. Yes. They're going to make their league title game. There is something great about the drive to Waco if you go from the, like, the Check Stop and Little Check Bakery in West Texas. Have you ever been there?
There you go. Get a kolache or whatever.
Yeah, it's fantastic, yeah. By the way. They have oddly have like a Czech, like the Czech Republic, like the former Czechoslovakia. Yeah. Right, that's what I'm talking about. It oddly has like a community in West Texas, if you want to know. Hmm. So
there's a few of those in like between Dallas and Austin. You know, you get a lot of Czech, maybe some German.
Who knew? Yeah, there it is. Anyway, so don't be disrespecting I-35's horribly boring drive. We can go into the Czech stop. Anyway.
All I know is,
so
in Texas, where nobody wants to abide by any rules, you drive like 93 in the right lane and 47 in the left lane. They're completely opposite of how it's supposed to be.
You can drive as fast as you want on that road. You can have an open container and a shotgun. That's the beauty of don't disrespect the highway. That's my kind of highway. It's my kind of highway. Anyway, so this is where we're getting with this, is everyone's waiting for him to drop. And I think TCU is, you said eight. I think there's nine teams left. There's really only seven with a playoff chance. TCU obviously keeps winning. They're in. Fascinating team, and they will have earned it. You got the two in the Big Ten, Ohio State and Michigan. You've got USC out west now. UCLA lost late, if you missed that, to Arizona. Oregon lost to Washington. So all we have left now is USC as a national playoff contender. Be an amazing story. Lincoln Riley just takes the Trojans and takes them there. But they've got a lot of work to do. They still have UCLA next week, and they've got Notre Dame after that. And then they're going to have somebody good in that title game. So they got a lot of work to do. And then you got the three in the SEC.
Mm-hmm.
Georgia, obviously. Georgia may be in at this point, unless they blow two games.
Yeah.
LSU can play their way in after they just cleared the hardest test, because the A&M isn't showing anything, to get to Atlanta. I'm not saying the hardest test to beat. And then Tennessee steps back out and says, hey, don't forget about us. Let's ignore what happened in Athens. We look really good. And they just run away from Missouri. So you have three in the SEC, two in the Big Ten, USC and TCU. Now you have these two in the ACC. I don't know if anyone's going to ever believe in them. Clemson or North Carolina, they both lost to Notre Dame.
They need help, because their one loss resume stacked up against a one loss resume of a Tennessee or a Michigan or Ohio State, right? Or in USC, for that matter. I mean, they would probably lose out to all of those as far as one loss. So they need some help, I would think.
I thought Tennessee had a very good day yesterday. Alabama beats Ole Miss, and we'll talk about that in a sec. That helps give Tennessee a little more credit to their Alabama victory. And then Oregon, which seemed to be the committee was like, their loss to Georgia, the same as Tennessee's loss to Georgia, they dropped. So to me, there's nine to go. There's seven to go. You know, can TCU run this table? Can SC run these two gauntlets? Or else we're going Big Ten SEC.
Yeah.
A blowout in the Michigan-Ohio State game. Like, mm-hmm. we're now ESPN has that completely convoluted
probability index or whatever.
Like they had last week, they had Alabama at 16%.
Yeah.
16%, I think it's like 16.6 is a roll of the dice, where it's like, mm-hmm. you know, you take one die, you roll it.
Right.
What's the chance it comes up 16%. For Alabama to make it, I don't know who's the math wizard over there is.
It's like Alabama the win to probability. Make it.
They need LSU to lose twice, them to win three times, and including beating Georgia.
And they need something to happen to Tennessee.
And you need maybe not.
Right.
Or they needed, like, it's just like, come on, man, that's not 16%.
They're not getting that.
And here's the other problem of just trying to reduce this to a math equation is the committee ain't going to sit there and put three SEC teams in.
No.
And that's what you would probably need for Alabama.
I think if they win the SEC, they jump Tennessee. But anyway, it's not happening.
The SEC, they're not going to win. They're not getting in.
It's not happening because LSU won yesterday. Right, like that's not a roll of the dice. Right. So whatever. All right. So we're off the coast. Let's go to that Ole Miss Bama game. Great game. I thought it was a real statement for Alabama, which I know is beyond statements, but this team in particular proved they can win that. They've struggled on the road. They struggled in the SEC on the road, and this was a big win for that. What did you see out of that, Ross?
Yeah, great game. I was in the press box of the Tulane UCF game here in New Orleans, and I was watching more of that one on my iPad in the press box and the game playing out on the field. Some head-scratching things happened late in that one, right? Some interesting decisions by Ole Miss on that final drive or so. But as you mentioned, give it up to Alabama for the bounce back. You know, I think a lot of people were picking them to lose, and then the dynasty is dead would be only the second time since 2007, Saban's first year there, that they lost three regular season games. And, you know, everybody, I think a lot of people were picking against them and thought that this might happen. This might be the end. And lo and behold, they pulled themselves out of what was a fairly awful, you know, offensive first half or certainly quarter and a half of football, and pulled themselves out and pulled out the win. And when the pass went incomplete to basically end the game, Ole Miss's final drive, the camera cut to Saban, you know, and he had his like hands raised and he had this like big smile on his face, and he kind of like ran onto the field, and you just don't see that as much from him. Like, you don't see a lot of that unless it's like a championship or something. And I think that probably was a good indicator of how important the game was and how big like it was to him that his team was able to be resilient in bounce back. So yeah, it was huge. It was a great one in Oxford. I heard the atmosphere there was incredible. And you know, it's tough for Lane and them, right? I've seen he's been tweeting a lot this morning about God, which has been interesting to see. So, you know, it's tough, man. And you got to wonder if a game like that and the result of that makes you kind of like scratch your head. Like, man, this was the time that Ole Miss could win. You know, it had the team to win. The situation, the scenario was like perfect. Like, and it didn't happen. And now, you know, Ole Miss will be sitting home the first week of December, never having won the West. It's a tough one to swallow, I know, for them.
Yeah, that Saban's reaction jumped out to me too, Ross, where it was like, whoa, that tells me a few things. First of all, yeah, I think he was genuinely relieved and happy that his team won, but it also tells me how far down he had dialed expectations for this team. And it does go to the point, I still think the dynasty's over. This team doesn't look very good, does it? I mean, Ole Miss is a good team. And for Alabama to get the victory showed some character and some resolve. As you said, like all the intangibles lined up against them, and then they fell behind by 10. They were behind by 10 most of the game because they're not very good. And if Bryce Young doesn't just pull things out, they absolutely lose that game. And then Lane became on the last drive the guy that the Alabama used to drive the Alabama fans crazy. Remember, they used to have the buttons run the damn ball, Lane. So Quinshon Judkins, their fantastic running back from the state of Alabama, gets them down into the red zone. Has a 35-yard run, has a 14-yard run. So one of the last four plays, they're all passes. And they had time to run it. But they don't give Judkins another touch when they get into the red zone. And that just was, to me, that
run the dang
like
ball,
Lane. Yeah. Run the
enough
dang
with the
ball,
trick Lane. Ball. Enough with the trick plays, Lane.
Yeah.
Run the dang ball.
Yeah.
When God wants you to grow, he makes you uncomfortable.
Yeah.
This is from Lane Kiffin's Twitter feed. Also, it's Sunday morning, and a lot of you degenerates didn't go anywhere near a church, nor did I.
But, yeah.
So I listened to the pastor Lane Kiffin this morning.
Yes. All of our clergy who listen to the podcast, sorry, keep us in your thoughts today because we're taping this listen, right during
I'm serving the my time. Flock. My flock, the yes. College Football Inquirer listeners. When I love that's a good one by Lane. It's like so for the angry old Miss fan that wakes up, we blew the game. I'm a little salty. Maybe I had a few too many at City Grocery after to try to drink this away. And then you wake up angry and he's coming up with God stuff. And you go, all right. I think Ole Miss, let me tell you what, if being uncomfortable against Alabama was God's plan to make you grow, Ole Miss would be 10 feet tall right now. Because there's a long list of being uncomfortable. Love the Saban reaction. And I thought it's a reminder of like how small, as big as the sport is, how small the sport is. And it was a reminder of a coach who's just excited that his guys, because, you know, there's a lot of mean, nasty people like Pat out there who are like, you lose by a field goal at the end of the game, which kind of was because the coaches blew it. In the time, we should have had overtime against Tennessee. And then you blow, and then you lose on a two-point conversion at LSU. That,
and you barely beat the worst like Texas A&M like, team guys, in decades and a terrible Texas team that we just killed. But anyway, go ahead.
Got the dub. You got the dub, okay? So, Pat, like, mean, don't listen to them because they're saying you suck. They're saying you're not as good as your predecessor. The pro, everyone but Bryce Young. I will say Bryce Young is like, he's not going to win the Heisman, but this is the most valuable player in college yes. football by far.
Yeah.
Yep. This team does suck without Bryce Young, but yeah. they got Bryce Young. So this is what, let me put it this way, Quinn Ewers, this is what a really good quarterback does on a bad team. So anyway, I don't know where this point is going, but you know, Saban wanted this for his team, for his guys.
Yeah.
You know, this game means, I mean, it means something, but it's by Alabama standards, season shot, whatever. Forget your little 16% chance. LSU had already won. You got no shot. And it's just, I love seeing that out of Saban. Like, I know that he was just proud of his guys. Like, you know
he's
what?
All about, like,
we went and won a good game.
You know, like he talks about resiliency so much, you know, and like, and responding. And, you know, you hear those words from him. And this one is just such a great example of his team showing that. So I think it did. It meant something special to him. By the way, Alabama is 3 plays away from being 10-0 and 3 plays away from being 5-5. What an insane yeah. season. It's incredible the games that they've had. You know, they beat Texas in the last play. They had to stop Texas A&M on the last play, and Tennessee beat them on the last play, and LSU beat them on the last play, and Ole Miss, they had to stop Ole Miss on the last play. What a crazy season.
Yeah, I'm wondering whether yesterday's game becomes that fifth. I put that out there on Twitter yesterday. The fifth 10 million plus viewership.
Right.
It felt like nothing else was really going on at the end of that game.
Yeah.
Like there weren't competing awesome games. I think like ABC had Michigan blowing out Nebraska, and it was like just everyone just tune in to watch, and that would be like their third massive game for a team that, you know, like Alabama on the brink is just good TV. So right. I, you know, and even then, like the number of people crowding watching that game at a sports bar or whatever, I'm sure just huge numbers again. So all right, Pac-12, Oregon. Terrific game.
You fittingly let out a Pac-12 and then a real cough, though, that sounded fake. Pac-12 gagging it away.
Yeah, that was a real cough. Pac-12.
Well timed.
Pac-12 might have stayed out too late last night also.
It did. I stayed up with them till like 2.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Pac-12, it was great. It was exciting. Arizona finishes UCLA. Terrific game, Washington, Oregon, one of the great underrated rivalry. Kalen DeBoer has resurrected that program quickly. Terrific victory over the Ducks. Pat, what happened out west now? We're just down to USC's got to run this gauntlet, but those are 2 really good wins. And Arizona's rising. So, like, it's just a fascinating league right now.
It is. I mean, it's been an interesting season. It's continuing to be interesting. It will be for the next 3 weeks as well. And, yeah, if you're like a Pac-12 fan or if you're George Kliakoff and you're sitting there saying, okay, USC, which is jilting us, leaving us high and dry, is our hope. Go USC. Kind of not. You know? I mean, you want to make the playoff. You want the revenue. You want the bragging rights. But that's a tough one to root for, to carry your banner. But that's what you got. Oregon-Washington was a hell of a game. Great game. From the uniform combos, the old solid color rush, you know, the day glow yellow for Oregon and the purple for Washington, to the up and down nature of it. Some great quarterback play, some very good skill position play, some good defense occasionally, not a lot. But the way Oregon lost the game was just brutal. You know, we have seen them have chances at national championship contention. In 2007, they were going to the playoff, and then Dennis Dixon, their quarterback, blows his knee, and there it goes. Poof. End of the, like, this time of year. In 2010, they're in the championship game, and it looks like it's going to go to overtime, right? And Michael Dyer somehow stays off the ground and runs, like, 50 yards, and Auburn kicks a winning field goal. Poof, gone. And then this one, I mean, you are up 4 points. Washington drives, and Michael Penix, who is phenomenal, makes one bad play, tries to throw it into the end zone, gets intercepted at the one. Oregon turns around and just mashes you downfield. 5 yards, 7 yards, 6 yards, 10, whatever. 20 plays, gets down to the 10-yard line. And then on third and five, you run Bo Nix. He stopped. He gets hurt. And everything goes to hell from that point on. There's like five plays in a row, succession, where it's just all falls apart. You kick a field goal, Washington gets a chance. You kick off out of bounds, Washington gets field position. Michael Penix makes a ridiculous cross-field throw. Your safety misplays it. They get a touchdown. It's tied. And then Dan Lanning makes the worst call of the weekend. Mm. Maybe one of the worst calls of the season. You got fourth and one in your own territory. It's tied. There's 90 seconds left. Bo Nix is not in the game. Bo Nix is like one of the best short yardage running quarterbacks in recent years. He's healthy enough to go back in. You don't put him back in. You don't call timeout. You don't punt. You keep your backup quarterback in. He hands off to a guy who slips and falls down. Washington kicks the winning field goal. I mean, it's just brutal. Dan Lanning's had a great first season as a head coach, and he had a terrible, terrible moment there, and it happened to be one that cost his team a chance at a playoff. So it was a great game. It was a brutal ending for Oregon.
Bo was trying to get back in, right? Wasn't he begging to get in?
According to Brock Huard calling the game, Bo Nix jumping up and down to the sidelines, ready to go.
Yeah, I think
you call timeout and you put him back in. They didn't.
How about Michael Penix? I mean, this guy, I was looking at like his game by game. He's thrown for 300 yards pretty much every. I mean, one game he fell 2 yards short of the 300 yard mark, but dude has put up basically, you know, averaging like 350 every game in like, you know, 70, 65, 70% completion percentage. His touchdown interception 25-6. Last night he had 408 against Oregon, two touchdowns, one interception, completed 75% of his passes. I mean, guy's got a rate at quarterback rating of 155 this year, just tearing it up. And here we are, right? We're in a familiar place for the Pac-12, where this year they've been really exciting to watch. Like the conference, the games have been exciting and really great. Actually, they've got two or three of the best games that we've seen this year out there on the West Coast. And they sit here, you know, with one last hope because they've kind of beating each other up, eating each other up. So yeah, it's just it's a struggle out there.
I think it's exciting. Yeah, you know, Penix transfer, right? You can just get things going quick. And Penix isn't sitting there on a bad team and instead is making these big plays. And like, it's interesting, we talk about there's seven teams left. Three of them have transfer quarterbacks. Now Hendon Hooker, it was like, because he's like 30 years old.
Yeah,
that was a while ago that he transferred for Virginia Tech. But Daniels, Caleb Williams at USC, Jaden Daniels at LSU, Caleb Williams at USC, also, and Hendon Hooker of the seven, all transfer QBs. Like, pretty interesting. Like, like the transfer market on QBs is just a monster.
Get and the right guy in the right spot, and it can change things. Right. And that, great decision by
Penix. I like Washington being good.
Caitlin DeBoer.
Yeah. Dreadful decision there at the end by the Ducks. But it was a good game. I was really happy that, you know, a lot of people got to watch Pac-12. Because, you know, you get the Arizona, huge statement game for them, but it's 2 in the morning. So you just get really the really drunk East Coast people at the sports bar watch. But still good. We're down to USC. And they got to run this gauntlet to do it. All right, a little convoluted. I forgot. Let's get back to the SEC. I don't know if we have is there like a geography rule on this? Like, we're supposed to.
No, there are no rules for this podcast.
Oh, good. You good, because I don't know them. And technically, I'm the host. I'll check our bylaws. I'll check our bylaws on this. LSU, SEC West champs. And obviously, they got some work to do, because we look at the playoff becomes like everything. But two things. Let's take a moment that Brian Kelly went down there and took a reeling program where everyone was leaving and won the SEC West.
Yeah.
Probably the hardest division in all of football to win. Perhaps, I don't know. Maybe the Big Ten East is also there. But he wins it first year with a game to go.
Yeah.
And he's got it. Incredible job by LSU. And they go up to Arkansas, win this game 13-10. It was frosty in the morning. It was not the preferred drinking time for LSU fans. KJ Jefferson was not there, but the LSU defense was all over it. And Harold Perkins, let's just do this now, because I think all of us would give the small sample Heisman to Harold Perkins. 8 tackles, 4 tackles for a loss, 4 sacks, 2 forced fumbles, and another one that almost was a forced fumble. A freshman linebacker, Harold Perkins, basically won them this game. Unbelievable effort. Defensive players don't win Heismans, the real one, but good Lord, maybe this guy does. Incredible, incredible performance by Harold Perkins. Just absolute dominant. And a great day for LSU. They're going to Atlanta in year one of Brian Kelly. And the fit, how's he culturally fit? Fits good when you're in Atlanta on the first weekend of December. Ross, what happened?
Yeah, unbelievable. I woke up to a text from one of the LSU staff members when they arrived at the field for the 11 a.m. Central Time kickoff. And so they arrived like at 7 a.m. or 6:30 in the morning. Sun was just peeking out, and the picture is of the field, and it's frozen. It is a frozen tundra, and I'm thinking, like, everything in this game is pointing to the old trap game and upset, and the LSU going there to lose. I think I said it on the pod earlier this week, like, they don't play well there. They're coming off a physically grinding game against Alabama, a big emotional like win. It's cold. The field's frozen. It's 11 a.m. They've got freaking hot broth on the sideline for the players.
I saw that.
Which Arkansas people were making fun of. It's like, it's by kickoff, it was like 45 degrees.
There were a lot of people around the country chuckling at that.
Yes, the playoff home site. Let me just interrupt.
Yeah.
You call that frozen? That's just Tuesday morning, bro. That's just a little frost on the windshield. You run the car for 2 seconds and
man,
melts.
If
LSU up in Wisconsin in the middle of December, they're gonna be, oh, we're not even leaving the hotel. The game's at 11. I can't get drunk enough. Where's my chicken broth?
Hey, I was standing on this sideline here in New Orleans. It was cold yesterday.
Oh, whatever.
It was like 55 degrees and blowing, and I was on the sideline of the UCF Tulane game just shaking. And somebody came up to me and was like, dude, are you okay? I'm like, it's freezing down here. You know, it was like 52 degrees, you know.
Yeah, yeah, soft. But, bring it.
Well, you know.
Let's go.
anything below flip-flop weather, you know, anything below 65 degrees is cold in my mind. So, but yeah, it same goes for the Tigers, who are sipping or gulping hot broth, a hot chicken broth on the sideline. But let's get back to Harold Perkins. Incredible. And really, I mean, you know, LSU probably doesn't win that game without him. I mean, I think it's, you could say that. I mean, they don't win the game without him. He's a five-star guy. I think he was like, you know, number eight. 24/7 had him like number eight overall prospect in last year's class. Quite a recruiting battle, I hear. He was a former Louisianian who lived from here in New Orleans. His family was displaced by Hurricane Katrina, so he moved to Houston, grew up in Texas, and it was quite the war, I think, to get him to LSU, like all the SEC recruiting war battles are. And he's there, and, you know, he slowly has progressed. When I visited LSU before the Alabama game, a couple of the staff members were telling me he's the best player on our team. Like, he's the best player on our team, and they were trying to get him to, you know, on the field more, you know, and he was a freshman. He's young, so it was kind of like a mental thing, trying to get him to understand some of the schematics and all this stuff. And they were trying to get him, you know, if you put him on the field, you got to take somebody else off. You know, there's all that. There was all those issues, but they found a way to keep him on the field more in this game, in an Alabama game, than any time this season. And something tells me we will see him on the field, you know, a lot more going forward. Just an absolute freak. And I'd like to see him up against, you know, the best tackle in college football, because he has just beaten the last few like a drum.
Yeah, he's spectacular to watch. He really is. I mean, he's got speed and punch, and he's bendy, you know, like they say about pass rushers. I mean, he got under the rush the one time in particular that I don't know. Like, he was a foot and a half off the ground. He's 6'3", 220, and he's like, looks like just a little like roadrunner, but scooting around underneath the tackle. So he's fantastic. One of the best things Brian Kelly did since when he got there was to get him to decommit from Texas A&M. He was,
yeah.
And he ask Harold Perkins today, would you rather be on the Exxon Valdez in College Station or on the good ship Lollipop here in Baton Rouge and going to play for the SEC championship? I mean, yeah. He made a wise choice, and he's made a big, big difference. And he was just huge in that game. The one thing I will say, I haven't, you know, broken down the film or whatever, but usually, like, when a guy just has an unstoppable game like that, the offense contributes by not blocking him well, either, you know, plan, scheme, whatever. But there was not enough help on Harold Perkins. There wasn't enough identifying him. Arkansas's playing backup quarterbacks who probably weren't very good at maybe checking out or identifying things or whatever the case may be. But, like, if you go back, remember JT Tuimoloau from Ohio State, he had the greatest pass rush game in history against Penn State. Well, since then, he's had one pass broken up and a couple of tackles and no sacks. So, like, you can game plan a way to minimize a great pass rusher a lot of the times. And I think Arkansas contributed to its own demise there.
Sam Pittman has coached a heck of a lot of offensive line through the years.
Yeah.
But you know, maybe he already thought of this, but maybe two guys on one guy on that.
Maybe.
Two guys on that guy.
Probably. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
Running back help, tight end help, 911 help, something.
Yeah. Maybe it wouldn't have mattered. I want to know this. So this rule, I can't find whether this is a rule or not, but I remember when Penn State was throwing PB&Js at Michigan. So
yes.
As it was explained to me, you're not allowed to have any football food on the sideline at a football game. No food there. And we talked about maybe like setting up barbecues. And
yeah.
Texas would have like the Chipotle bar on the sideline, or like Torchy's tacos, so they could all be well fed while they lose and not gain a first down. It could be recruiting advantage. We got to look at all our recruits. They're well fed, but we suck. Anyway. Maybe somebody's a little still salty about picking Texas.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe.
Somebody picked Texas.
Anyway, you're not, as I understand it, I can't find this in the manual. I don't know. There's no food on the sideline. Is chicken broth a food? Mm. Okay, so they show the sideline. LSU, because they're so scared of 50-degree weather, they have a hot chocolate and chicken broth for the players to consume to stay warm, because God knows we don't want to lose a limb out there like we're climbing K2.
Frostbite, man.
Climbing K2.
Like, oh my God, the wind shear here in Fayetteville. It's 53 degrees. Is chicken broth food?
Well, this is a good question. This is a very Seinfeld question. I think
they might have cheated. Mark Sanchez ate the hot dog on the side of the Jets.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Caught ordering a hot dog from the stand. Anyway, that's the NFL.
This is a good debate, Dan.
Did LSU cheat by having chicken broth?
That's right.
Is it food or is it just the liquid? Right. Is it just
The last thing? Last thing LSU needs is another investigation. Okay?
Was Will Wade cooking up the chicken broth? I don't know. Where do you get chicken broth at the last minute? Pat? Is chicken broth food? Is it just chicken flavored water?
It's chicken flavored water, man. Look, I'm giving him a pass on the sideline broth as a potential violation. I can't go there. I made some rice. I put chicken broth in it. It looked pretty watery. You know, you don't need a fork to eat chicken broth, right? It's not food. It's fine. Well, it's fine. Let them have their broth. I am the weather middle ground. I'm the neutral zone between you two, between our Gulf Coast warm weather guy and our upper Midwest frozen tundra guy.
Yeah.
Here in Louisville, you're both ridiculous, but at least in the middle.
Do not call Detroit upper Midwest. The upper Midwest people will get angry with you. That's Minnesota and stuff like that. Like the Tulane people mad at me for mispronouncing that school. I can't literally cannot pronounce Tulane. One school. I hate. Tulane. I'm not even going to say. I can pronounce LSU. That's it. So this is my only school left.
That's it. Yes. Yes.
I think I pronounced Texas right, but I may be wrong.
This chicken broth debate reminds me of the Seinfeld episode of Consomme, the Consomme episode. Is Consomme a meal? Is it a meal or is it not a meal? You know, and then Elaine says, well, does the Consomme have crackers in it? And okay, you can have crackers. Ooh, if it has crackers, then maybe it's a meal. You know, it's like, did the chicken broth have crackers? I didn't see any crackers. I don't know.
I think crackers would be crossing the line.
Crossing the line.
You got a NCAA violation.
I don't even know if this is against the rules or not. So someone might be like, no, you can drink, you can literally gnaw on a bone over there. But I don't know. Chicken broth with no cracker sucks. I mean, that's not good.
Yeah, no, it's bad.
Hot chocolate. Like, do we put what if there's marshmallows in there? You can't have hot chocolate without a little marshmallow, right? Is marshmallow food? The whole thing. I don't know. In the annals of LSU cheating, this would be pretty far down the list.
Pretty small.
LSU's like, what? Wait, you're going to bust us for that? We let Will Wade coach for 3 years. Now he's our chicken broth consultant. I don't know.
Chicken broth consultant.
LSU. Hey, the dream's alive. The dream is alive. I don't know if anyone's going to believe them when they get to Atlanta, but the dream is alive. So we're going on that. All right. You know who, maybe LSU's got a point. Chicken broth. Maybe somebody in the actual area of the country that needs the chicken broth should start going with the chicken broth trick. And that's the Big Ten West. Just give up, people. Just give up. Just give up. The whole league is a burning dumpster fire in,
it's so bad.
So bad. I believe the entire division is Mo Ibrahim and a bunch of people who are terrible at playing football. That's it.
Mo Ibrahim, Chase Brown, and a bunch of people.
Chase Brown, right? There's a couple guys that are like, you're lost. Like, you got transferred to the wrong bus and you're in the wrong place. Iowa could win this thing.
That's just preposterous.
Yeah.
Iowa's
in control. Yeah. So I'm looking at a
spreadsheet. I don't think anyone controls their own destiny or something, which is like mathematically impossible. At a
spreadsheet it was like really intricate spreadsheet on the scenarios of Big Ten West by Ryan Burns of the Minnesota 24/7 sports site. It's incredible. And he's got on here. Well, no, you're right. Maybe. Yeah. I mean, they need some things. They need
how
some
does
things
nobody,
to happen.
Is that statistically possible that nobody can control their own
destiny?
I don't think it can be, can it? Somebody has to be able to control their own.
I'm reading this in, the closest is Purdue. So Purdue has to win out and have Iowa lose to Minnesota or Nebraska. Iowa has to win out and have Purdue, it says Purdue lose to Northwestern or Indiana, and there's a lot of other things that could happen too. It looks like Iowa and Purdue are in the best spots. Iowa can win out, or if, I don't know. This is unbelievable. I mean, it's a jumbled mess, but you should see the spreadsheet. It's wild. I'm having trouble reading it. Just like the Big Ten is having trouble picking a champion. Big Ten West picking a champion. It's crazy. But to boil it down, Iowa and Purdue have the best shot, assuming that Illinois loses to Michigan, of course. Illinois beats Michigan. Everything changes, and Illinois is like kind of back in the driver's seat, and I think it can control its destiny.
Yeah. Illinois ain't beating Michigan with Dick Butkus. That ain't happening. So, it's the grossest thing I've ever seen. I mean, it's just unbelievable. These teams are all so, ugh. I mean, consider this. He said, like, basically, Iowa's got a very live chance to win their division, and they are by far the worst offensive team in the division. They're the second worst offensive team in the United States of America in terms of yards per game. The only one worse is New Mexico. They're 130th, and they've got a chance. I mean, it's they against Wisconsin, 146 total yards, 2.15 yards per play, and they won by two touchdowns. How?
I think I figured this chart out. So Iowa does control its own destiny. I know. Iowa does control its own destiny.
I think Illinois does. No.
This is Iowa. This is Iowa controls its own destiny. They went out, they win the Big Ten West. If they lose, then there's a bunch of other, there's all kind of stuff that could happen. Then it opens the door for Purdue. If Iowa loses one, Minnesota or Nebraska, and Purdue wins out, then Purdue wins the Big Ten West. If Minnesota wins out and has Purdue lose one, then they win the Big Ten West. Wisconsin can still win the Big Ten West. If they beat Minnesota, then several things have to happen. But Wisconsin still can win the Big Ten West. And then, of course, Illinois, assuming they lose to Michigan, they would have to beat Northwestern to end the season and have Purdue, Minnesota and Iowa all lose to win the Big Ten West. So it is quite the mess. But Iowa controls its own destiny, it appears.
The worst offensive team in the Power Five has a chance to win its division. Kevin Warren almost called off a season once. He can call off the Big Ten championship game. He can do it.
Just cancel it.
It's within his power. Save us from anyone from the West playing either Ohio State or Michigan in a game in December that we're supposed to care about.
I agree. Turn it into a Big Ten volleyball game.
Yeah.
Set up something like this. Be like, we're doing this. Okay. We're going to like, we got Nebraska, and I think Nebraska and Wisconsin are like top five each in volleyball. Like they're killing it in volleyball. Like, just be like, we're doing this. Nobody wants to watch this garbage. Ohio State is going to beat these guys 55-3.
I just sent y'all on the group message the chart, this scenarios chart. Good luck with that. You'll need some bourbon in your coffee to understand that thing.
Well, there's no way I can understand this this is a mess. I don't know. Anyway, get shape up, people. Big Ten West. We're better than this. Maybe not. A lot of really good engineering schools, like smart people go to these schools, and maybe they're just trying to run a math equation, like they're like Goodwill Hunting.
Somebody like, figure it out.
The different, like only like 10 people can solve this problem, and we're going to find, and I can't, I'm the professor. So we're going to see if Will Hunting can do it. Maybe that's, I don't know what they're doing. I don't know. Making it difficult. Anyway, I don't know what you guys are doing out there. You're having fun with us. Pat Fitzgerald. Let's try to win a game on the continent. Come on now. You only got a couple to go.
total, just a total disaster. So, but hey, that Michigan Ohio State game is going to be good. Let's get to small sample Heisman. We don't like giving them out at the end of the year. Let's do it every week. Small sample Heisman time.
We don't give out one award at the end of the year. We give it out week to week.
It's the Small Sample Heisman on the College Football Inquirer podcast.
Who's got one? Who did some research?
I got one. I was at UCF Tulane in New Orleans, and got to see live John Rhys Plumlee, former Ole Miss quarterback, Ole Miss transfer, plays for UCF now. The Knights went into to the rocking Yeoman Stadium in Uptown New Orleans and rocked the Green Wave, giving them their first American loss, and they did it on the feet in the arm of John Rhys Plumlee. He had like over 300 total yards, 176 rushing, 132 passing, completed 17 passes, scored three times, two on the ground. They couldn't stop him. Tulane's defense, which has kind of been the anchor of its team all year, could not stop John Rhys. And that was the first time I've seen him live. And man, he is built. I mean, like, I was on the field during pregame, and man, he is thick. Like, he is built in. And he ran over people on Tulane's team, or ran around them, or ran through them. So give it up for him. And the Knights are kind of in the driver's seat to get the group of five bid into the New Year's Six bowl game.
Yeah, good for the Knights. Good for the Knights. Good for Gus. They've had a very nice season. Let's see. The American's been interesting to watch it whittle itself down to UCF, Cincinnati again, but a vulnerable Cincinnati. Yep. and Tulane. So I'm going to go with the late night hero for me with Jaden Delora, the quarterback for Arizona. He is wild to watch. I mean, his mechanics are awful. His decision-making sometimes is awful. I even tweeted, at times, he does not look like he has full motor control of what he's doing, because he's just all over the place. I mean, but he's all heart. He's all guts. He makes plays happen. And he led Arizona to a huge victory against a top 10 opponent, UCLA, in the Rose Bowl. He was 22 of 28 for 315 yards and two touchdowns. Transfer from Washington State, who has kind of helped with Jed Fish raise Arizona's program. They're two wins away. They need to win at home against Washington State and against a very bad Arizona State, and they go bowling for the first time in a long time. I mean, that program has been way, way down. So it's kind of fun to see them getting it back together a little bit, and Jaden Delora has been a big part of that, and he is extremely entertaining to watch. He was Saturday night into Sunday morning, and his emotion at the end of the game when they won was very cool.
A little bit like watching a baby deer like run across a frozen pond. You're like, oh no. But yeah, in the end, they made it. It's a fun little TikTok. Yeah, it's fun to watch. All right. Small sample Heisman time. I kind of have two, but I'm gonna give two. You know what? It's almost Christmas. Spirit of giving.
There you go.
Troy linebacker Carlton Marshall. I think that's how you pronounce his name. Sorry. 22 tackles in Troy's 10-9 victory over Army. That's a hit. That's a linebacker game. Mm. 22 tackles gives him the career lead at the program. 500 and actually, I think it's the FBS history.
FBS
lead, all time, right. Most. Yeah. All time most tackles. 548 tackles, and he's still got some games to go.
Wow.
He arrived. He's 5'9", 210 pounds. He arrived at Troy as a walk-on. He did not play his first year and has emerged one of the best players in the program's history. 100 tackles, obviously, the last three, 106 already this year. Amazing defensive player. Live the dream, man. You're a walk-on at Troy. You're 5'9", walk-on at Troy. Probably not thinking you're ever going to lead the history of college football in anything, but he managed to do it. So 22 tackles. Great job. Troy's 8-2, having themselves a year. And then I want to give a brief note. I guess I give him a small sample Heisman too, but Cameron Babb, the wide receiver at Ohio State.
Good one. Good one.
Monster prospect, recruit, back in 2018, four ACL surgeries. Did not play in 2018, 2019, 2021. He played in 2020, did not catch a single pass. Beloved player for his heart and what a great kid he is and everything at Ohio State. And they're up late against Indiana. Good on Ryan Day and the whole program. They got him in. He caught his first career catch, 8-yard touchdown to make a catch and score a touchdown for the Buckeyes. The scene where literally, the whole scene was awesome. Place went crazy. Obviously, what's left of the crowd and the team runs down and you just see how he's got like a brace on his knee for a wide receiver, which you don't normally see. Great moment for the Buckeyes. So I am such a good and compassionate person that I give two small sample Heismans out for that. I will now get mean during Say Something Nice.
Good.
Yeah. Sorry. Sorry for the diversion.
That was good. I talked to Cameron Babb's mom back in 2020, when there was people were trying to decide whether we're going to have football or not. And she was a wonderful woman and was kind of going through his struggles to that point, which continued, as far as not being able to get on the field and how much she wanted to see him get a chance to play. And I'm sure for her, it was wonderful to see him score a touchdown.
First of all, it was a great play too. Like it was not an easy catch and he got it and he ran to the end of the end zone and he like got down on his knees and it's just an awesome scene. And the teammates, right? They just all went wild. I mean, they just went, the whole team were stormed down there. So good to see. All right. See, I'm saying something nice already. I'm jumping segments. Pat, you've been particularly mean in this podcast. Can you say something nice?
I have been, but justifiably, in my opinion. But yes, I am ready to say something nice. I am. I'm going to say something nice about Duke and Mike Elko. What a hire that's turned out to be. Incredible turnaround from where the program was last year to where they are now, which is 7-3 overall. And here's some stats for you. David Teal, the great writer in Virginia, gave me the idea for this, and I just looked him up. So last year, Duke lost to Virginia by 48. This year, under Mike Elko, they beat Virginia by 21. Virginia also has a first-year coach, not going very well. Last year, Duke lost to Miami by 37. This year, Duke beat Miami by 24. That's a turnaround of 61 points. Turnaround of 69 against Virginia. Last year, against Virginia Tech, they lost by 31. This year, they won by 17. So that's three opponents in the Coastal who also hired new coaches. And boy, oh boy, just based at least on one season returns, Duke got the best of them. Mike Elko is getting it done. Very rapid turnaround for the Blue Devils. Way to go.
Thanks. Well, Pat, you swiped mine. Duke just had us all. Duke has us all like enamored, doesn't it? I'll switch up and go with what we were just talking about earlier. Iowa controls its own destiny to win the Big Ten West and play in the championship game where it will almost invariably get beat 27-3 by Ohio State or Michigan. But that's not nice, I know. But it is nice that they control their own destiny. And so congratulations, Iowa. If you win out, you get to go play Michigan and Ohio State in Indianapolis. Yay. There, how nice was that? There.
That was really good. That was good.
That was appropriate niceness for this podcast.
That was the cold chicken broth of nice. Say something nice. Thanks, I guess.
Yeah.
Sustenance in some way. I'm going to say something nice about Northeast football because the Connecticut Huskies under Jim Mora Jr. are bowl eligible. They are 6-5. Yeah. They beat Liberty. End Liberty's big thing. Maybe Auburn should hire Jim Mora Jr. I don't know. UConn, out of nowhere, because that program was dead to the world last year, has resurrected. Great victory. Boston College is having a horrible year. They defeat NC State. A great win for the Eagles. There's all that. So things are rolling up in the Northeast. Not mentioned UMass. Not mentioned Syracuse, who could go 6-0 and then end up 6-6. Syracuse could end up 6-6.
Yeah. Who could have saw that coming?
the most Syracuse thing of all time, be going 6-0 and then ending 6-6. But because this is Say Something Nice, let's focus on the amazing job of the Connecticut Huskies in Jim Mora Jr.'s first year. They're popping, and things are rolling there, and a bowl game is good. And you know, Connecticut, I always thought had the potential to be decent, and maybe it's got, they got a good running attack. Robert Burns had 104 yesterday. Victor Arosa had 2 touchdowns as well, running the ball, and they took it to Hugh Freeze and Liberty. So, way to go, Huskies. That's my Say Something Nice. There you go. So we'll be back Tuesday. We'll promote only a couple more weeks here. It's kind of getting sad. We get towards the gotta really appreciate them. We'll be back Tuesday to hype up next weekend. Continue to share us on social media. Subscribe to this podcast so you don't miss a single episode. Tell your friends about us, all that. Leave nice reviews. We really appreciate all of it. Talk to you later.